Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm very pleased to be at the headquarters of Ultron in Johannesburg today, sitting here with Robbie Venter, the group CEO, as well as Sam Sitole, who's CEO of Value Capital Partners, which is in the process of acquiring, it's a 10% stake, right?
In
15% stake in Ultron. Okay, great stuff. So I'm really pleased to be with you, Robbie, today to talk about Ultron in some detail. This business has been through enormous change over the last few years. This morning on the drive over here, I was trying to think of all the announcements and deals and disposals, et cetera, that you've announced since the Altec delisting, which I was surprised to hear was actually all the way back in 2013 now. So it's coming up for 4 years since that business was delisted. But there's been huge change here. I'd be very keen, if you don't mind, just to spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes talking in some detail about everything the company's been through over the last 3 or so years and how we got to the point where we are now.
Sure, and thanks, Duncan, for inviting us to be part of this interview. If you go back, I think it was always our stated goal to simplify our group structure. Going back 5, 6, 7 years ago, we had numerous listed entities through the group, and it was a complicated structure. We controlled all of those entities, but it was listings on top of listings, and the decision was taken at that point in time to really try to simplify the group, make it a bit more investor-friendly, and find ways of simplifying that relatively complicated historical structure, and that was the decision taken and implemented by delisting Bytes, initially actually delisting Powertech many years ago, and then the last of them was the Altec transaction that you refer to, which was 4 years ago now. And just to put a little bit into perspective, I just mentioned a couple of them, but if you go back to when I started as CEO at Ultron in 2001, we actually had 10 listed entities in our group, going back to companies like Autopage and Powertech, and there was Ventron and a whole bunch of
FinTech as well.
And FinTech, and so lots of listed entities. And finally, the final piece of the puzzle was concluded about 4 years ago with the Altec delisting.
Before you continue, though, this is a fascinating bit of history. Yeah. Why were there so many listed entities?
I think it goes back historically to really early 1990s. These type of structures were relatively commonplace. If you have a look at most of the corporates, you look at Anglo American, you look at some of the other structures, it was often a mechanism to perpetuate control by having a listing on top of a listing, but also as businesses were acquired, giving investors the opportunity to invest in specific instruments or entities of the listed entity, rather than investing in a conglomerate. Mm. But what ends up happening in these type of situations is that through these processes, value is destroyed, because there's always a discount that gets applied, and there's liquidity issues when you've got a shareholder owning 50-something percent and it's just complicated. Mm. You know, people have a look at Ultron and in had that choice of investing in one of 10 listed entities, and by the time they'd understood everything, they'd gone and invested in Dimension Data or whatever was easier to do and focused, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the original motivation. And in fact, the mandate that when I first came in from our board of directors was to really focus on what was core and what was not core for the group. And for those that were core, then buy and own 100% of those businesses and simplify the structure. So for the most part, they were considered to be core assets, and we acquired the minority shareholders. In some cases, we divested. So we had a 30-something percent stake in then listed Voltex, and we disposed of that to Bidvest at the time. But for the most part, it was consolidating businesses that we had and seeing those as core and getting down to one listed entry point in 4 years ago with the final takeout of the LTEC minority. That gave us the one listed entry point, and we were pretty much a conglomerate at that point because we had our IT businesses and we also had our power tech infrastructure businesses. During the latter part of the 2000s, leading up to the financial crisis, were actually the star performers in the group. So we had considered those to be core assets, and the new Altron post the LTEC delisting basically had about 2/3 of its revenue in the IT field and about 1/3 of its revenue in the infrastructure space, and that was the intention to basically build the group from there, focusing in those two areas. Unfortunately, market changes, impact on manufacturing businesses in South Africa, impact on some of the key customers and fundamental shifts in their buying patterns in the electrical space, the construction field, really turned the market upside down, and we saw massive reductions in volume requirements. We saw a lot of new imports coming into the country. Barriers to entry were not that high in South Africa, and fundamentally, South Africa Inc. or our competitiveness in manufacturing was being exposed and eroded. And it was at that point in time that the board and management strategically decided, let's reconsider the future of the group. Let's look at what's really been core for us, and is about 2/3 of our revenues was the IT side and telecom side, and let's really focus on that and divest our non-core businesses, which was effectively the power tech businesses. So a new wave of change and divestiture began probably about 3 years ago, I think we've made pretty good progress in that area. We've divested. We're probably about 80% of the way through the divestment of those infrastructure type businesses. We've obviously used the proceeds to strengthen our balance sheet, which is a lot stronger now than it was.
And you got into a lot of debt around the LTEC delisting, right? So that there was a
lot. It was partially around the LTEC delisting. We took on about 1.6 billion of debt, if I recall correctly, to take out the minorities at LTEC. So that was probably the core part that turned. Historically, the group has had a very conservative approach to its balance sheet. A lot of investors would always chide us for having a lazy balance sheet, and the leverage that we took on for LTEC did increase our debt levels, and it was always the board's view that it was a transaction-based increase in debt, and we would use cash flows and divestitures to reduce that debt and get back. And it is still our plan to be a more conservatively structured balance sheet company as we go forward. We've made good progress in that so far. But yes, to answer your question, the LTEC was a big, the takeout of the minorities was a big part of that increased leverage that we found in the company. So we're now focused on really looking forward as a smaller but nimble and focused IT business as we go forward. So we will have our core assets now. We'll have revenues of somewhere in the region of around 15 billion rand per annum, and an EBITDA of about 1.2, hopefully growing 1.3 billion of EBITDA, very good return on capital, because the IT businesses are very cash generative, but and also have lower invested capital compared to the manufacturing businesses, which had a lot of capital invested and also required a lot of capital in terms of ongoing capital expenditure. So we think that this is a good shape to be in going forward. We've got really leading positions in the IT market. Certainly one of the one or two largest and biggest IT companies in the Southern Hemisphere, and we really are going to focus in that particular area going forward.
The IT businesses have always done very well. I mean, I remember back, Rob Abrams retired now, but over a period of years, you'd put out results, and Bytes was always a standout component to that. Altec used to be that too, but they ran into a bit of headwind a few years ago, you disposed of Altec AutoPage Cellular. That was separate to the whole restructuring process, which saw the PowerTech disposal. That was something that was almost forced on you, right, by the changing situation in the mobile market.
Yeah, I think changes in the market, and it was, you know, I said that we had taken the call to divest the manufacturing businesses, but we also had AutoPage in there. So that you're absolutely, and that was a big transaction. I mean, we realized over R1 billion for that transaction, but the motivation for the selling of that business was the fundamental shift in the cellular market. The increase in the interconnect rates made it much more competitive and put a lot of pressure on the distribution channel, which is where AutoPage was sitting, along with Nasha Mobile, our biggest competitor in that independent service provider area, sitting between the operator, Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C, and the customer. And the pressures in the market in terms of those interconnect rates, and also just the evolution of what's happening in the voice market, where voice is basically trending towards a zero price, put so much pressure on in terms of the players that were sitting in the middle of the channel that we felt that while there was still value in those businesses, it was better to go and try and realize that value than wait until and die a slow death over 5 or 6 years. Yeah. So that was the decision taken by both ourselves and our competitor, Nasha Mobile, and we saw off there.
Ultron was criticized at the time for waiting, I think it was about a year beyond the Nashua Mobile sale, to dispose of the AutoPage sale. With the benefit of hindsight now, do you think those critics were right? Do you think you should have perhaps sold that business a bit earlier than you did?
I think that it, in hindsight, probably would have been better to get it out earlier. But if we have a look at from a financial perspective, I think the proceeds that we realized were in line with our original expectations and very much in line with the proceeds that Nasha Mobile achieved. So I don't think we bore a penalty in terms of proceeds that we received or having a business that was more difficult to sell. But it was a time-consuming period, and there were losses that were incurred during that period of time for the company. So if we'd done it a year earlier, we probably would have been able to avoid some of those losses and some of the funding that was required. But the eventual proceeds met our expectations.
So on the PowerTech side of the business, you've done a number of disposals over the last little while. Just talk me through those again. Just remind us what the biggest ones were and also what remains to be done.
So the biggest one was our cables business, Aberdare Cables, which we divested to a company by the name of Heng Tong out of China. They were one of the top four cable makers in China and globally ranked in, I don't know, I guess maybe the top 25 or so. We have realized proceeds from that transaction already. The transaction is completed. That was also over R1 billion that we realized. We kept a 17.5% stake in that business, not by choice, but as the Chinese wanted a local partner for a period of time, but we've secured and financially got a guaranteed put in 2 years' time on that transaction, and we'll realize the price was set at the same price that they bought their initial stake at. So we'll be realizing a further $100 million out of that transaction in 2 years' time. That was by far the biggest out of the transactions. There were a number of smaller transactions that were concluded, and there have been quite a few announcements of transactions that are in that have been signed, but they're in the process of going through competition commission approvals, etc. So outside of the Powertech, outside of the Aberdare business, probably the next biggest transaction would have been the battery group, which is our Willard and Sabat battery group. That is in the final stages. We haven't received the proceeds of that sale, If you say, well, what's left? Probably the one that's the biggest one that's left within the structure. I won't go into all the detail of the other smaller transactions that we completed, but it would be our transformers business, Powertech Transformers, which is based in Pretoria West and down in Cape Town. That would be the biggest asset that's kind of left on the table right now, and it's a business that's facing very, very challenging times. Its major customer, Peristatal, has reduced their order intake significantly, and the business is very dependent on that customer. And so when you go from buying 15 large power transformers a year to buying one large power transformer a year, it has a very dramatic impact on the business. So it's been through a tough time. We've had to restructure. We've had to downsize. We've had to close factories. I think in terms of potential buyers, I think a bit of certainty is needed around the future with Eskom, basically. That's right. That's really the reality of the situation. And there are, I suppose the bright side of things, if one does look at that business, there are quite significant orders or tenders that have been issued by Eskom towards the latter part of last year, but they haven't yet been adjudicated. So we're waiting for those to be adjudicated, and we still see it as a non-core business, but think it would be a lot more attractive asset with an order book or some sustainability going forward from Eskom.
So you're not actively seeking buyers right now. You want to perhaps build a bit of a base there before you go back to the market looking for potential.
No, we are in the market looking at buyers for that business as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Both local, particularly on the empowerment side, and also internationally, strategic industry players in the international environment.
Okay. I'd like to bring Sam Sithole in at this point. As Robbie's been saying, the group has been through a fundamental restructuring in the last few years. Value Capital Partners, now you, perhaps as a starting point, maybe tell me a bit about Value Capital Partners. You started it with Anthony Ball. You both used to run Brait. Tell me a bit about yourself and about how you got involved in the business.
Okay, great. Duncan, thanks for having me here.
Pleasure.
As you said, the business, we are the co-founders are myself and Anthony Bo. We used to be CEO and FD of Brait. So we've got about more than 10 years of working together, and we, developed a very good relationship working together. And as you know, Brait underwent a restructure in about 2011. And at that point, Anthony Bo stepped down as CEO. I remained FD of the group, and we went on a new journey for Brait, which was very successful. And about 18 months or 2 years ago, I started thinking about what I wanted to do next. And, we had become very good friends with Anthony, and we kept in touch, and we decided to form Value Capital Partners. And essentially, in terms of Value Capital Partners, it's an investment company. That's the bottom line. But the way we want to think about ourselves is private equity in the listed space. It's something that's quite successful and quite prevalent in Europe and in the USA, but not so much so in South Africa. And the whole thesis some in the US call it activist investing. We like to call it more an engaged shareholder, because activism has a very negative connotation to it. And the way we think about our model is, I think if you just take a step back, the whole development of capitalism and entrepreneurs starting up businesses, you started from a position where a lot of these businesses were owned by the family 100%, and the family was the engaged shareholder. But over time, what you've now seen is that the development of asset managers and mutual funds, you've got a very fragmented ownership of these businesses. So a lot of these businesses you probably find where you've got no key shareholder, and the biggest shareholder is 5%. And in those businesses, you find that those businesses will benefit from having an engaged shareholder, someone who is skillful, so that governance just doesn't become a checklist that people go through, but actually you've got people who've got skills to be able to look at capital allocation decision and assist management with strategy. So that's one part of the investment strategy for us. Less so in Altron, because you've always had an engaged shareholder in Altron. The second piece of what makes our business relevant is that in all these listed space, because you are dealing with listed space, what you always find is that at critical juncture, there comes a dislocation between the share price of the business and what the intrinsic value of that business is worth. So in a nutshell, the business goes out of fashion with the market. And sometimes that, you know, out of fashion is misplaced because people are not thinking through in terms of the intrinsic value of that businesses. So for us, we see that as an opportunity where if there's a mismatch between share price and intrinsic value, and we've got a unique way of unlocking that value, we then buy about a 5 to 15% stake in that business, ask for a board seat, and then we work with the board, management, and other shareholders collaboratively to drive the business forward. So that's, in a nutshell, that's basically the Value Capital Partners business model.
So when was VCP founded, and who is it invested in so far?
Our first investment was Altron.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So the company is about 5 months old. So we started 1st of October last year.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So,
but I mean, there are various other investments that we are working on, and I'm sure in due time those will be announced because these are all listed businesses.
I was going to say all exclusively listed companies.
Correct.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. All listed businesses.
Okay. So this week, Thursday, what's the date? The 9th of March. Yes. On the 9th of March, you're going to have a special meeting of shareholders at which all of this is going to be put to shareholders and they're going to vote on it. The restructuring of the group. Now, this is a big restructuring. It's not only to vote on the VCP acquisition, but also to look at a broader restructuring of the group, which will in effect see the Fenter family's absolute control over Altron being diluted for the first time in its 51-year history. So it's quite a profound moment, I guess, Robbie.
Yes, it is, Duncan. But as we said last year, the business is, because of my children being too young, people in the wrong place at the wrong time, right place at the right time. There's no logical family succession beyond myself and my father for the business. So as we announced last year, this happens to many family businesses. You get to a point where you have to make an evolution from being a family managed and run business into a independently managed and run business.
I guess it doesn't usually take half a century, though.
Yeah, fair enough. 51 years is a long time.
It's a good
time.
Innings, yeah.
And my father started the group on April Fool's Day, and he said that on April 1, 1965, and said that he did that because if it didn't work out after 6 months, at least he had a good excuse. 51 years later, we find ourselves in a position of evolving, but we think that this is a very good evolvement for the company, given where the family is right now, and given the succession options that we have, and again looking at making the company investor friendly, making the company easier to understand. This is we got to this single listed entry point, but we still had these two classes of shares, which effectively created a control structure for the family, which allowed it to vote absolute control, 57%. Frankly, the markets don't like these type of structures, and we saw this as an opportunity as the family was evolving to collapse that control structure. But I think it's we're doing that as part of this transaction. But I think it's very important to indicate that the family's not selling any shares during this transaction. So we retain exactly the same economic interest we have in the group. which is around 18%. We retain exactly that amount going forward. This isn't an opportunity or a situation where the family is selling out. And in many ways, we're taking a very similar approach to the VCP guys. We believe that the assets that we have underneath are intrinsically not being reflected in our share price, and with some of these moves, we believe that they can act as a catalyst to unlock, hopefully relatively quickly, the value that sits underneath the group. So we remain absolutely committed to the group as a family. My father steps down as chairman, but he remains a non-executive director and has the title of chairman emeritus on the board. When my successor is announced, I will revert to a non-executive position on the board, and looking after the financial well-being of that investment, which doesn't change through this transaction. And you know, if we saw this as an opportunity to exit or to reduce our exposure to the group, we wouldn't be doing a deal like this. This is a deal to hopefully act as a catalyst of to unlock the value. We remain fully committed going forward, as evidenced by the fact that we're not selling one share through this transaction.
I mean, just based on what the share price has done over the last few years, I guess it makes no sense to sell out at the moment, especially if you believe there's underlying value here that can be unlocked. Sam, when you had a look at this business, you obviously saw value here. Yep. In fact, since the announcement was made, the share price has doubled. I think it was around 5 Rand when the deal was announced, and now sitting at over 10 Rand. So
sure.
There's already been an unlocking of value before you even get involved. But Sam, tell me what you saw in Ultron. What is the specific, what got you excited about this business that you decided to invest your money here?
Okay, thanks, Daniel. I think it probably goes much further back than the transaction. I think, I think what's quite important is that we don't see this as a takeover of the business by VCP. The key operating words for us is partnership, alignment with people that we do business with. And in particular, I think, you know, we've got a special relationship and affection for Dr. Bill Fenter. I think if you go back into history, my partner, Anthony Ball, when he was still a partner at Deloitte, I think he was head of strategy group, he wrote a book called The Winning Ways in early 90s. Which one of the 25 companies that he profiled was Ultron. Oh. So Dr. Bill Fenter is someone that we greatly admire, one of the greatest entrepreneurs this country has produced. And over the years, we've had a lot of business dealings with him. I think in the early 90s, when Altec bought Radio Spore, it was part of Brait's portfolio company, so we had a lot of interaction with him. And then in the early 2000s, when they bought into ASCO, Brait was listing that business and delisting. So we had a lot of interaction with him. So this is a relationship that probably stretches almost 30 years,
okay,
you know, in terms of with the family, with Dr. Bill Fenter. So, and we've always said, you know, if the opportunities arise to do something together, let's be able to do something together. And also, what's also quite important is that when we looked at the business and what the journey of the business had already started, which is realigning back to the IT business, selling the manufacturing, we agreed with that business plan. So, and when they said, you know, we want to sell the core business, reduce our debt, and refocus on, we are 100% behind that plan. So, what we see is more giving affirmation to that strategy. Putting needed resources, we're investing 400 million of our own funds, and like what Robbie said, we wouldn't do that if we didn't believe, one, in the family, in the business, and the strategy that's on the table. Mm. So when we come on the 9th of March, when we come onto the board, we'll be 2 of 10 or 12 directors.
Yeah.
And we're certainly not going to have our way. What we believe is that if we suggest something, it will be digested. The family will be a key part of that. They will have the same directors as us, more or less the same holding. And that collaboration, that mutual respect and partnership will be beneficial for all the other shareholders.
So is VCP represented on the board then as non-executive directors or executive directors?
Non-executive directors.
Non-executive.
Yeah,
okay.
So both myself and Anthony become non-executive on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Correct.
I just want to touch on that, Duncan,
sure,
and expand just a little bit. You know, Sam correctly said, I mean, the way we saw it in terms of doing this transaction was 100% collaborative. And if you're going to make a transaction like this work, you need two things to be in place. Number one, you need to have had background and having a relationship and worked with the people. And Sam's absolutely right. When we bought USCO in the 2000 timeframe, Anthony Ball actually sat on the Bytes board for another 2 years. And then obviously with the Radiospur transaction, we had some knowledge there. And we also watched from afar the success at Brait and the changes that were done. So that mutual respect, I think, is the first catalyst that you have to have for a successful transaction. If you can't get on with somebody, you're not going to be able to work together, whether you join shareholders or not. So that was that. We could tick the box in terms of that, in terms of how the family evaluated this proposal. I think the second thing is that you have to have complete alignment on strategy. So if the family strategy was to and the existing board to divest of the manufacturing assets, focus a smaller group of say 15 billion rand in the IT space, focus very heavily in the growth areas that we like in within that space. And if you had a misalignment and sell off the manufacturing side, if you had a misalignment in that, again, you wouldn't be able to have a successful. And so we spent quite a bit of time prior to the transaction actually sitting around the table and saying, well, where do you guys see this company going? Where do we see this company going? And there was an amazing alignment. It was spot on, not many differences at all in terms of where we wanted it. The fact that we want to return the company to a more conservative balance sheet. We've made some good progress so far with the non-core assets, but that will continue. That's focused on strong balance sheet and then also dividend paying and all of those matters were discussed and we had a very good alignment. And I think those are the two key things that you have to have to have a successful transaction. And I think we've got that.
Okay. Now you've indicated that you spent a lot of time talking to each other about strategy and where the business is going to go in the future. Robbie, you've also said that you're going to step down as CEO at some point in the not too distant future to make way for a non-family member to take over as CEO of the group. Obviously, when you bring someone new in, he or she is going to have his own idea about strategy and that sort of thing. Where are you in that process at the moment? Have you identified a candidate at this stage? What is your thinking in terms of what type of individual you want to get in here to run this business?
So, to answer your question, yes, we're in the advanced stages of a process that we've been following for actually, probably the last almost 12 months. Yep. Since I made the announcement earlier last year that as part of that evolution for the family that we'd be seeking a new CEO. I think the profile of the person is that because this is an IT-driven business going forward, we're leaning very heavily towards finding somebody who's got good experience, and certainly the candidates that we've got on the table right now all have good experience in the IT field. They have good backgrounds in the IT field, and they've had the opportunity at managing director CEO level to bear the responsibility that it requires going forward to take this company forward in its next stage. So we will be looking for somebody with industry experience. Of course, as we go through this process, one of the other key things that we have to do is to have alignment with just like we had with VCP, you've got to have alignment with the CEO around the strategy and yeah. where they see. So we've explained to the various candidates where we see the business going. And so I think we've got a pretty good alignment of that. Nothing is going to change in terms of deciding that non-core assets are now going to be core assets. We've got alignment in terms of that. So, and then I think the other thing around profile is that the board did indicate their preference for an outsider. So we are looking outside of the company, but obviously considering internal candidates as well. But that was something that we thought probably would also bring some fresh thinking into the group and some good ideas and growth plans. So I'm hopeful that we're during the next quarter we'll be in a position to make an announcement in that regard.
Okay, so it's likely then that you'll step down as CEO sometime during the course of this calendar year.
Yes.
Okay. So in terms of the group strategy, I mean, you've done a lot of the groundwork here in terms of positioning this group for the future. In terms of that strategy that you and Sam have been talking to each other about, do you wait for the new CEO before you tell the market what that plan is? Is it the job of the new CEO to set out that future strategy, or do you do it now at this meeting on Thursday, for example?
I'll give my views and then let Sam say. I don't think much changes, Duncan. I think the strategy around the core and the non-core has been one of the very active things we've been busy with, and that will remain and that will continue. So there's no changes that are expected in there. So a focused IT business is totally strategically aligned with what the new CEO's thoughts were. Of course, within there will be tweaks, and there will be areas of growth opportunity that he or she would identify, and we'd absolutely have to have a debate. But I fundamentally think that as we've gone through this process with the various candidates, we've pretty much got that alignment on that says that somebody new coming in will bring some fresh thinking, absolutely. But fundamentally, there won't be any huge shifts in the strategy. Message that we've been sending over the last year. Sam, I don't know what your thoughts are.
Absolutely. I mean, part of what we try to do as VCP, and it's something that we believe quite strongly, is that we are going to be a shareholder, we are going to be a non-exec on the board, and the company should have one voice. And that voice is normally the management of the company. So they communicate with shareholders, with the market on what the strategy is. So you probably won't hear VCP talking outside of a board meeting in terms of what the strategy is going to be. But I fully agree with everything that Robbie has said.
Okay.
And I think one of the other things that we weighed up very carefully in our assessment of this transaction, Duncan, is I think the investment of the $400 million that comes into the company will really be able to assist the new CEO to implement some of those strategic initiatives, whether it be through internal investment or whether it be through external investment. Whereas for the last couple of years, I think maybe we've been a bit constrained because of the challenges and the distractions that we've got in selling the non-core assets. This kind of I often see this investment as pulling forward the implementation of some of the key strategic ideas and providing the flexibility for a new CEO along with the board to implement those sooner than what would have been the case if the investment wasn't there.
Okay. Just from a practical point of view for shareholders, the structure of the business is going to be collapsed. You're going to have one listed entity going forward. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. In terms of this deal, though, the Fenter family is still going to retain some control beyond its economic interest in the business. Just explain to me, Robbie, what that control still is and why you felt it was necessary to still include it.
I'll give my views, and then hand over to Sam to give his comments on it. Yes, there will be a listed entity. We'll only have one class of listed shares, so there'll be no dual structure or anything like that. It'll just be everybody's economic interest is the same as their voting interest in the business. However, the family did believe that it needed to, having built this business over the years, to basically have a little bit more of a say in terms of where the business was going to be going. So okay, we will keep our 18% economic interest. That doesn't change, but we will be issued with a private share that will allow us to vote 25.1% of the of the company. Effectively, that does present opportunities to really be a core decision maker in the fundamental changes that a company may undergo. Not tweaks, because there's a board of directors and the like. So it's not, we're not talking about tweaks, but you know, major divestitures or major acquisitions will need to be supported by the
family. Are these things that typically would require 75% voter shareholder approval?
Correct.
I see.
Correct. And so that's that was the thinking around that. We obviously have to remain invested in the company to have that. Additional vote, the threshold is at 10%. So we'd have to have at least a 10% economic interest, otherwise that falls away. You can't sell that share; it's not tradable, it effectively just allows the family the opportunity to really be consulted on those really fundamental changes in the business.
In practice, is it a bit like the golden share that the government had in Telkom all those years ago? In that it gave them special rights over the business?
No, we have no other special rights. So we have no additional dividend rights. We have
it's a voting issue.
Yeah, it's just that's all it is.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Sam, do you want to come in on that at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the way we negotiated with the family in terms of the structure, I think what was quite important is that you've got these A shares that own about 32% of the company, but they've got 99% of the voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the non-voting shares that own about 70% of the company, but you've got 1% of the voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
So you had this mismatch. And these, because they don't have the voting power, the N shares have always traded at a 3-5% discount. So we had to think of a way to equalize that.
Mm-hmm.
So our initial proposal was just basically to collapse the structure. But rightly so, the family owns, at the moment, has 57% control of the company. And normally when you do this transaction, people ask for 25-30% premium to collapse the structure. So for us to get to a position where the family has a say in the special resolution only, so for us it's a journey that we've got where we're coming from a 57%, we go to the 25 plus 1%, but this is not transferable to anyone else. And I think we put this to all the shareholders, and by the time we announced the transaction, we had about 93% of shareholders giving us their irrevocable support.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, great. You know, it's been, as we said earlier in this podcast, it's been 51 years since your father founded this business. Letting go must be hard to do. Maybe just Robbie, your thoughts on it's after such a long period of time, you are relinquishing your effective control over this group. What does it feel like personally? I mean, you've always controlled this business. You're bringing in new shareholders, fresh blood. Is it difficult to do, or does it just seem like the logical next step for the business?
Look, it's certainly a time of great change, as you say. I personally have been with the company 27 years in an operating capacity, and I think 16 years now as CEO. So it is a big change, but I think it's a necessary evolution for the company to go through. So, in some ways, from a personal perspective, it's something that that helps me to spend more time with my family.
Yeah.
My family lives overseas, and really, it's not a sustainable situation to be apart from them to the degree that I've been apart from them over the last 7-8 years.
Where do they live in the States?
My wife lives in London, and my children also live in London, but are studying in the US right now.
Okay.
So I'll be able to spend a bit more time in London, be able to look at picking up a couple of different things. I'm certainly not at the point where I'm going to I'm going to drift off into the sunset and retire and play golf. Firstly, I don't play very good golf, so I don't think that would be a good idea. But I'm certainly looking to keep myself busy, and I still will keep a strong relationship with the company to help transition to the new CEO and maintain some of the very core relationships that we've got, both on the customer side, but also on the multinational, international partner side, Xerox and NCR, etc. These are relationships that have been built up over many years. So I'll play a very key role in maintaining those as we go forward, and look out for some other opportunities. I certainly want to keep myself busy.
Okay, I was going to ask you what your plans are next. Do you plan to you see a lot of executives leaving the ICT space after running big companies and getting involved in the startup space. Is that something that interests you at all?
I think that I'll look at some of those opportunities, and maybe look at working in an advisory kind of way. And who knows, if something pops up on an operational perspective, I've still got many good years left in terms of that.
Great. Robbie Fenter is CEO of Ultron, and Sam Satole is CEO of Value Capital Partners. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us on this podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thanks, Duncan.